I represent Luann Shalley, a plaintiff in this case. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. I think there's one main issue in this case, and that's how to define accident in this insurance policy. And there's a long line of Oregon cases.
Mr. Verley, would you please speak up? I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Some of what you're saying.
There's a long line of Oregon cases that define accident as an incident that's contrary to intention and expectation. And under this definition, there's really one critical fact here, and that's that Mr. Shalley didn't expect or intend to die in the mountain.
No, except for suicides, most people wake up in the morning not expecting to die by sundown, and yet some do. Walk down the street, and
that's true.
I mean, some people suffer a massive heart attack and die, having no previous medical history. Is that an accident?
No, I don't think that would be an accident. The cases say what they say, and they say that it's an accident is something that's contrary to intention and expectation. That's the definition that's been used over and over again in quite a line of...
But it's not a very useful definition. It doesn't exclude very much. So much of what happens in life is contrary to expectations, and yet people would not call it accidental. And if you'd include everything that is not expected that results in death, you would sweep in a lot of things into the concept of accident that I think no reasonable person would include there.
I think no matter how you define accident, there are going to be incidents, I think, that fall within the definition, but that everybody understands is not an accident. And I think that's part of what the boss
case... Well, why is that situation with the deceased here? He went on a trek and he suffered a sudden onset of a medical condition which caused his death. Why is this the kind of thing that most people would say, gee, that's not what I think about when I contemplate an accident? He fallen into the realm of a volcano and gotten injured and died that way. That would be an accident.
Well, I think I go back to the case law, and over again, the Oregon courts are saying you got to look through the eyes of the insured, and what did they expect or intend? And regardless of whether or not,
do you think that looking at from the point of view of a reasonable insured, that reasonable insured would say, you know, you have sort of list the ways you might die that are accidental, that anybody would list this kind of situation?
What
is accidental about what happened here? What is it that makes it accidental?
Well, he didn't expect or intend to die on the mountain.
But that doesn't differentiate it from... How do you... Does that differentiate it from the guy who walks down the street and had a massive coronary and...
By the same token, Your Honor...
Some other medical condition that causes...
By the same token, Allstate's definition is so broad that it excludes virtually everything.
I think isn't the point that Allstate didn't define it?
That's
in other
exactly
words,
right.
You know, if somebody said to me, how did he die? I'd say he died in a climbing accident. So maybe I would disagree with Judge Kaczynski about how I would characterize it. But Allstate is the insurer here, and if they wanted to exclude this or exclude something else, they could do that. But they haven't done it. They've left it to a rather tortured line of Oregon cases.
That's exactly right.
So which Oregon case do you think we ought to look to?
Well, I think the best cases here are Finley and then McCormick and Baxter. McCormick and Baxter says that the Botts case did not alter or amend the definition of accident that the court came up with in Finley. And that's the one that says you've got to look through the eyes of the insured. And
they didn't exclude disease of infirmity of body or mind.
That's
a specific exclusion, right?
Yeah, it is.
Why doesn't that fall within the exclusion? Even if, let's say, it falls within the broad broad definition of accident, why doesn't this fall within?
Well, we do have pretty...
It probably was an infirmity. He didn't die by having his skull cracked or by falling into a burning volcano and burning to death. It was a bodily infirmity, no?
Well, we do have pretty clear Oregon case law on what a disease is in this kind of an exclusion. It says a disease is a disorder of an established or settled character.
I thought he used infirmity here, but disease or infirmity.
That's what the exclusion says. Yes.
Okay, is infirmity the same as disease? I wouldn't think so. I would think that somebody, let's say, who... just to come up with something, that somebody, let's say, is in a wheelchair, I might say has an infirmity, although they might be perfectly healthy, maybe in a wheelchair because of an injury, on the legs or something, and so they may not have a disease, but they would have an infirmity. Isn't an infirmity different from a disease?
I see your point, but I'm not aware of any case law that actually makes that distinction, and I think...
But they do use separate terms that have somewhat different meanings and or connotations. Why wouldn't this have been an infirmity?
If you look at what the two doctors here testified to, both of them said that this is just a temporary condition that can be alleviated if you just come down in elevation.
Infirmity can be temporary. I mean, let's say you have a broken leg, you're in a cast, you have to use crutches. People say you've got an infirmity. That's not a permanent infirmity. That's a temporary infirmity. It's the most quite common. Why wasn't this a temporary infirmity? Something that happened. It just happened to be that, I mean, he could have gone away. He could have, let's say he descended more quickly, I believe. Mm-hmm. The infirmity would have gone away and nothing would have happened. It just so happened that the infirmity lasted so long that it resulted in death. It wasn't alleviated soon enough.
Like I said, I see your point, but I think you got to go back to the Oregon case law that talks about this having to be of an established or settled character. And
I'm sorry, those... involved disease, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Did Allstate argue that this was an infirmity?
I don't recall that they did. I'm sure she'll tell you.
But it's in the policy, right?
It is. If you look at the policy case, the one
and
in...
And how long established does a disease have to be under the case law?
Well, they don't set a time limit. They say established or settled. And if you look then again at the affidavits of these two doctors, they're saying this could have been alleviated as soon as he came down the mountain. I suppose it was a matter of hours. It would have gone away and he would have been fine if he'd been able to descend that quickly.
Which way does that cut?
I beg your pardon?
I'm sorry, which way does that cut?
It's certainly not it doesn't have a settled or established character. I think it cuts in favor of saying this is not a disease. Or
let's say somebody catches a virus, Ebola or something, that sometimes can kill somebody within 6 hours. You're healthy at one point, and not everybody goes through this, but it sometimes can be very fast. Marburg, one of those really nasty viruses, mm-hmm. and it kills you. Would that be an accident because it didn't last very long?
Well, I think are you asking whether that would be a disease or not? Or?
Yeah. I'm sorry, would that be a disease, yeah.
Yeah, I would assume that would be a disease, yeah.
It sounds to me like that's not much longer than what happened to the deceased here. He goes up there, he's from reports is he's tired, he's looking winded, and it takes several hours. He makes it all the way to the top, and then he makes it down, right? He made it to the rim.
That's right.
And then he made the station down, so there was several hours. Would that be enough to be established?
Well, like the court in the Paulison case said, absolutely not.
Why would the Ebola case be established with disease?
There's a different distinction, I think, between the Ebola kind of a situation and what this is, because this is not, I don't think this comes within the common understanding of a disease. It's just some sort of a stimuli that is temporary. Once it's removed,
Well, but you were saying it's not a disease because it's not long enough established. You want to argue that it's not a disease because of some other reason. We can talk about that.
I think both.
We were talking duration.
I think both
apply,
okay, definitely.
Why is this not a disease? What is the other reason?
Well, I think for both reasons. And like I said, this is the doctors both said that this is just a condition that you can be afflicted with for a very short period of time simply because you're in a high altitude, and once you come down, then it's alleviated.
On the issue of disease and infirmity, don't the organ courts say they're the same, that they're treated as synonymous?
Would that be the Hutchinson case?
Yes, the Hutchinson case.
Okay, yeah, you're right, Your Honor.
So there is no distinction in Oregon
right.
between disease and
That's
infirmity.
Correct, I think. Thank you. Anyway, there are a couple of ways that you can come at the accident issue, and one way that you can look at this is that it's an ambiguous provision, I think you mentioned. If you look at the concurrence in the Pope case, the Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court there said that accident is an ambiguous term, and it's up to the insurance company to give it whatever meaning that they want to. They can define it narrowly if they want to. Here they didn't, so I think, for lack of a better term, they're stuck with the very broad interpretation that the Oregon courts have given to the term accident.
Which sweeps in any time you get up in the morning and die, you don't expect it to.
I'm sorry?
Which sweeps in any situation where you wake up in the morning and you die,
well,
and you don't expect it.
In a sense, Your Honor, I think that may be what the Oregon courts are doing here intentionally. Because I think what they're trying to do is force the insurance companies to define this kind of a term in a way that's clear. That's what the court said in Pope. In fact, they said, unless insurers word their policies clearly, they have to bear the burdens arising from their ambiguities. So the burden is on them to come up with a clear, or if they want a narrow definition, they can do that. They haven't done it here, and I think the consequence is that they have to live with a very broad broad definition of accident, and it does sweep in a lot of... in fact, that's what the court in Paulson said, was that with this kind of a definition, virtually anything other than an intentional death is an accident. And I think that's what we have here. That's what the Oregon courts have done, and I think they've done it over and over again over the last 40 years. Now, Allstate has argued for a foreseeability standard. I don't think that's ever been applied in any of these cases.
They mention foreseeability in passing, however, when the cases are not 100% crystal clear.
There's some dicta in Botts that suggests that in certain circumstances that might be an appropriate standard, but that wasn't the set of facts that they had, and it was a very narrow holding. Botts applied, by its own terms, only to on-the-job heart attacks, and I think that was the extent of its holding there. And then if you look at McCormick and Baxter, it said that Botts didn't alter them, and the definition of accident that the court came up with in Finley earlier. So I think that's the definition that we need to deal with. Going back to whether this might be ambiguous, you know, under the Hoffman case in Oregon, if you have two definitions of a policy term and both of them are plausible, then you look at the policy as a whole, and if there's any provision in there that casts or sheds light on one or the other, then you go that route. But if not,
if you lined up 100 people and asked them, was this an accident?
Well,
go down to the courthouse and.
Well, this certainly isn't in the record, Your Honor, but I've had a number of lunch conversations with people. I've asked them, and the reaction I get uniformly is, yeah, this is an accident. I think
were they
it
boys?
Is. No, they weren't.
But then if you lined up 100 climbers and asked them how he died, they'd say died in a climbing accident, wouldn't they?
I think they probably would. But going back to Hoffman, if we have two plausible definitions here, you look at the policy as a whole, and the only thing in the policy that Allstate has identified that they think sheds some light on this is the suicide exclusion. They're saying that our definition renders the suicide exclusion redundant.
It doesn't make any difference to your case if he had died of a heart attack there or anything else, if he had a stroke, as far as you're concerned.
I think that's probably right.
Whether he was there or at work or at play or anywhere.
Well, Allstate would always exclude or always deny coverage under those kinds of facts because they say it's always reasonably foreseeable. If you want to swim across the pond and you drown, Allstate's going to exclude or deny coverage because they say it's reasonably foreseeable that you could drown while swimming. But most people would say that's an accident. And all these cases in Oregon say you have to look through the eyes of the insured. Did they intend or expect to die at that point in time? And if the answer is no.
I thought you look at that as an insured and say when you're buying a policy, do you reasonably expect this kind of condition, this kind of event to be covered by the insurance? Not do you that's really the test, isn't it?
I think...
Is this a risk you reasonably thought you were insuring against?
And I think what the cases are saying is that you look through the eyes of the insured on the day of the incident, and did they expect or intend this particular result? And like, for instance, if you look at the Finley case and the way the court applied the facts there, I think that's exactly what they're doing. That's the case where the insured drove up into the mountains during January, and the courts said he didn't expect to run into a snowstorm. He didn't expect his car to break down. And those were the kinds of facts that the court found persuasive, and they held that that was an accident. So I don't think the focus is on what you expect or intend when you buy the insurance. It's the incident in particular that you're looking at. Does that answer your question?
I think in the case of a ruckus asphyxiation gone wrong, you would consider an accident.
I'm sorry?
A case of erotic asphyxiation goes wrong.
Of asphyxiation?
Asphyxiate themselves.
Oh.
Yeah,
I think that probably would under this definition. Of course, now Allstate can define accident any way they want. They can exclude that kind of behavior. They can do any number of things to avoid liability.
It becomes a little difficult because you're people engage in all sorts of conduct.
Mm-hmm.
And times of right, everything in the policy gets longer and longer and makes it less likely people will read it and figure out what's in it.
Well, I think that's not the direction that the Oregon courts have taken, though. I think they're putting the burden on the insurance company to, like the judge said in the Pope case, to define things as clearly as possible. Otherwise, they have to live with this broad definition. And they've been pretty clear about that, I think. Going back to the, we have these two plausible definitions. They've said that the suicide exclusion is the only thing that sheds light on it, and that it's redundant under our definition, but what they don't say is that it's redundant under either provision, because suicide is obviously an intentional act, and an intentional act will never come within the coverage clause of an accidental death policy. So it doesn't matter how you define accident, a suicide will always be, a suicide exclusion will always be redundant. And so that doesn't shed light one way or the other on which one is more plausible, and then under the Hoffman case, that means that you have to construe it in favor of coverage.
Time's up.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Lisa Lear appearing on behalf of Allstate Insurance Company. I'd like to start off with the point about how you construe the term accident in this particular context and kind of tie it into Judge Kaczynski's questions about how this relates to the other cases from Oregon. And I think it's very important to distinguish the type of policy you're dealing with. It is true that the policy does not define the term accident. It is also true that the Oregon courts have said there is no universal definition of accident that applies in all contexts. In their reply brief, they challenged our discussion of that fact based on the age of the Botts case where the court discussed this. But in the more recent case in 1998, in the Fox case, the court went back to that very point and said, and in fact quoted the provisions from Botts talking about the fact that there is no universal definition and that we have to consider it in the context. In Fox, it was a somewhat unique situation because you had an insured seeking to beneficiary seeking to recover for the death of the insured under an uninsured motorist provision where the insured had gotten into a vehicle with someone who intentionally wrecked the vehicle. The insured did not intend to die in the accident, but he rode along anyway, and the accident went much further than they intended, and he died. The question for the court was, is this an intentional act, and how do we determine that? The court was dealing in this situation with a first-party context, which would make you think you're in the same kind of situation we are here. The important difference about Fox is that the court said the analysis has to come from what was required by the UF statutes in Oregon. And it went through the legislative history and determined that the legislature intended the analysis of accident to be based on the analysis that applied in third-party liability cases. The important distinction between what we're dealing with here in terms of defining accident and what was involved in all the third-party cases on which plaintiff relies for its definition of an accident is something that you don't intend or expect is that third-party liability policies exclude liability where the result, the thing for which the insured is being sued, is something that was intended or expected from the standpoint of the insured. That requirement in the policy forces the court to look at what the insured intended or expected. And the Oregon courts have defined that to mean you look at whether the insured intended the outcome, intended the result. The court in Fox, in talking about the issue and how you define accident.
I'm sorry, are you saying that Mr. Charlie intended to die?
No, absolutely not. We're saying that that is not the test. In Fox, the court explained that the fact that you define accident in the way it was done in McCormick and Baxter or in Box as something that is unintended or unexpected doesn't solve the answer because the court
still... What is the test in your view?
The test is whether the event that you intentionally engaged in, the voluntary act in which you intentionally engaged in, was reasonably foreseeable to cause the result, not whether some other event contributed to cause the result, but whether this caused the result.
And so he's on the mountain, and instead of getting hay for haste, he steps into a crevasse, and goodbye. Is that an accident?
That is an accident because there is another event there.
What is the event? He
intentionally climbed the mountain and got himself into a situation where he could step into a crevasse. If you're going to say he intentionally stepped into the crevasse, then we're talking about a different situation. If he stepped into the crevasse unintentionally, there is an additional event that created the problem that he faces, the injury or death that results from him falling in the crevasse.
He's walking across the snow and he doesn't step in a crevasse, but the crevasse falls out underneath him, which is what normally happens.
Correct.
He hasn't done anything more than walking across the snow, and he intended to put his foot each step of the way.
But something else contributed to his situation. There was an unforeseen, as the court described.
So what is that? It's an accident because what?
That is an accident because there was some mischance, mishap, or unexpected event, which is the language the Supreme Court has used in talking about accidents in connection with first-party policies.
Well, what if I get in a car and someone
rams into the car. I intend to drive the car.
You intend to drive the car. You don't intend for someone to ram into you. And the important point about this case is...
Okay, I get in a pond and I drown.
If you get into a pond knowing that you can't swim and you get yourself out...
No, I think I'm a wonderful swimmer.
Then there's some event that caused you to drown. It's not just the fact that you're in water.
Nope, they just find my body in the water. I've swum across this pond a million times, and I swim and I drown.
It can become a very difficult definition under some circumstances. The problem you have here...
Well, what about if you're in an airplane? You don't intend to die, and you don't know that. In fact, you're sensitive, maybe more than other people, and all of a sudden you get hate in the airplane. Is that an accident?
I think in that situation, because it is unforeseen to you, both in the context of you not knowing that this is a possibility to you, the situation we have here is that there's not something additional that created...
No, but see, now you're changing definitions on me.
But I need to talk.
No, but see, the difficulty is that the insurance company chose not to define accident. And as we lay out all these scenarios, it kind of depends on how you feel about it. There's not an actual objective criteria that we can follow.
Well, there is an objective criteria because you have to look both at the nature of the events that are involved and what it is that caused the injury. In this situation, the only thing that caused the injury was the exposure to the very conditions he chose to expose himself to. The fact that he was there is the only thing that can create what he faced.
Well, then why didn't you exclude mountain climbing if you don't want people going mountain climbing?
Because the company, I guess, is willing to cover situations where you engage in mountain climbing, but something else happens, like you fall into a crevasse, or you trip and fall and break your leg, or something along those lines.
What if instead of climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, which he did intentionally, I drove my car up Pikes Peak, which is like 14,000 feet, and the same thing happened? Would that be an accident?
If you drive to the top of Pikes Peak at 14,000 feet and expose yourself... How you get there, if you expose yourself...
Yes or no, is that
yes,
an accident?
That is not an accident if you intentionally drive yourself up there, whether you're climbing or driving. If you expose yourself to high altitudes, and that the fact that you are at a high altitude is the only thing that contributes to your death or injury, what you're trying to define as an accident, it's something you intentionally expose yourself to. That's different than the situation of if you go up to Pikes Peak and... For some reason, something intervenes and causes you to drive off the road.
There's lightning outside, and I kind of like lightning. So I walk outside, and I intentionally expose myself to it, and bam, I get hit, and I'm dead. Is that an accident?
That's not an accident. If you intentionally walk out into the lightning and choose to expose yourself to the very condition that results in your death, you have chosen to expose yourself to the risk that is not a mischance, a mishap, or an unexpected event, as the court has defined it.
Walk out in the rain and you happen to get hit by lightning, that's not an accident.
If you walk out into the rain and don't know that there's a lightning storm and get hit, that is an accident. She talked about a situation where you walk out there wanting, because you want to go out to the lightning. That's a different situation.
Let's say you don't want to go to the lightning. Let's say storm, normal storm conditions, and there's lightning. By lightning, as many people do. That's an accident. Unless you're in the forest and you get caught in the rain and lightning hits you.
That would put you more in line with the cases like the Finley situation where the person went on a trek not expecting the snowstorm to be what it turned out to be and faced situations or circumstances that the court defined as unforeseen, unexpected, or a misstep or mischance.
Most people, it's not foreseeable that you're going to, it's not expected that you will die on Mount Kilimanjaro. Otherwise, you wouldn't have 11,000 people walking up there every year. You'd have 11,000 dead people up there. So here's the difficulty I'm having with your argument is that if you are using this foreseeability test, which you argue the district court seem to pin the case on, at what, how do you define that foreseeability? Because I don't think death is
not expected, and the court talked about this a little bit in the district court, and the Oregon Supreme Court has talked about situations where while what happened to a particular person was not planned or intended. For example, in the Botts case where you had the man operating the grader machine and he had the heart attack, his particular, from his perspective, this was an unusually stressful day because the trucks were coming in too fast and he wasn't quite trained as well as he needed to be. And the court said, although the level of stress that he experienced is not all that common, and although it's not necessarily abnormal, although it's not all that common, it's not abnormal or unusual. It's very well known that hape and haze occur from climbing high altitudes when your body is not adjusted to that. This is something people choose to do, and it's why people get trained for it. It's not. It may not be usual that they die from it if they properly respond to it. But
no,
in the,
but you know, they'll never know until they die or don't die, right?
Well, that's correct. They'll never know if they're going to die until. If they live, they didn't die. I mean, it's very straightforward. But the problem is, he chose to put himself in a position where the only thing that caused his death is the very condition he chose to expose himself to. He chose to reach an altitude where there was that risk. And it was that voluntary choice. It's not a situation where...
Does it matter whether the risk is 1 in 10 or 1 in 100 or 1 in 1,000 or 1 in a million or 1 in a billion?
It might matter as to, in that sense, it might matter as to whether it can be considered a mischance, a mishap, or an unexpected event. But where it's something that's common knowledge. It's something for which people at Mount Kilimanjaro, at Mount McKinley, at Mount Everest, there are...
Drowning is a common event. In fact, that's why we have lifeguards at swimming pools and beaches. And it's common knowledge that you can drown in the ocean, for example.
Certainly.
So if I go out and I go swimming and I drown, that's not an accident because it's common knowledge. In fact, it's so common that they even, the government employ lifeguards to take care of me.
The problem,
what is the difference there in legal construct between that and Mr. Chale?
The problem there comes in the circumstances under which it occurs. If you are in a situation where it's reasonable not to expect that you would drown because you're able to swim, the lake is normal, the ocean is not an extreme current, or something along those lines, and you simply aren't capable of swimming and you choose to expose yourself to something you're not ready to handle, that's going to be a voluntary act. If you go out in the ocean and the waves get stronger, there's an undercurrent, there's something unexpected, that's a different situation, and that's
What if you go out swimming and you get a cramp in your leg?
That, again, is an unexpected event, and that's something that the court talks about.
What's unexpected about it?
I'm sorry?
What's unexpected about it? People get cramps in their legs swimming all the time.
But you chose to expose yourself to the water. There was not another event that came in. If you drown just exposing yourself to the water, that's different than drowning, exposing yourself to the water, and having another event like the cramp. That's not the situation. He didn't go up there and...
The cramp is a bit like what happens to Chad, right? And
no, it's not. It's different because...
Why is it different? You are...
Because you have...
Your legs, you're putting more stress on them than you normally do. Let's say you've been sort of a couch potato, and so you go out and decide to get really ambitious when you're swimming, and your legs just don't take it, and you're out farther than you really should have gone, and you get a really bad cramp in your legs and can't continue swimming. Isn't that highly analogous to what happened to...
I still think it's different because it really is a two-step process. You have the choice to go in the water, you have the occurrence of the cramp, and the combination of the two causes you to drown. In this situation, you have the choice to expose yourself to the high altitude. It is that exposure that caused him to die. It's not that, for example, that he fell and broke his leg, and because of that, he couldn't get down in time.
Right. I mean, it's one thing if he goes up high altitude and all of a sudden there's no oxygen and... that kills him, but he goes up there, he suffers a medical condition, and that's what causes his death, so sort of the intervening step, not unlike my Charlie horse.
But the difference between the Charlie
horse... What if I get a stroke while swimming? I'm really, really good swimmer, and I go out really, really far, and I suffer a stroke that if it happened on here on the street, I minor thing, I paramedics could easily save me, no permanent damage, but it's just bad enough that I can't swim back.
And again, that becomes an extra event or an extra element that adds to the reason why you died. That's not the situation here. He exposed himself to the very condition that caused his death and chose to do so. It's what the court has talked about in the difference between the Botts and Phillips cases and then the Finley and Polk case. In the Botts case, you had the grader operator. In Phillips, you had the man who was shot after he kicked in the door to his neighbor's house, who we already knew had a gun, and got shot. And the court said it was reasonably foreseeable that when he did that, he would get shot. In the Finley case, you had the person driving to Nevada who got stuck in the snowstorm and eventually caught pneumonia and died. The getting stuck in the snowstorm was different.
Do we know how foreseeable it is that you'll die if you go climb a Kilimanjaro?
We know that exposure to high altitudes is what causes hape and haze. We don't know the percentage.
I understand, but that wasn't my question.
We don't know the percentage of people who are going to die climbing any mountain. We don't know the percentage of people who are going to die doing any activity.
What do you mean we don't know? It's just not in the record is what you're saying.
I'm sorry?
It's not in the record.
It's certainly not in the record.
It's a little bit different than kicking in the door. We know a guy has a shotgun on the side in terms of foreseeability.
Well, but it's tied to the distinction that the court talks about between the Botts and Phillips cases and then between Finley and Pope, where there is something that is unexpected, some other thing intervenes, is unexpected, that wasn't part of what you intended to do. He intended...
Why wasn't haze as unexpected as a cramp?
Because haze is the result of the very condition he chose to expose himself to. In the swimming situation where you get a cramp, you choose to expose yourself to the water. You didn't say, I'm going to go into the water, no, I'm going to have a cramp, and then I'm going to drown. There is something else that intervenes.
Wait a second. It's the same thing. He goes into the water. The water causes the cramp because we know that water can cause that, and then he drowns.
And there's
no difference between the fact that being at altitude in some situations could cause hape or haze, but it might not. You might not get a cramp, and then you walk out of the ocean fine. The rest of the people on his team walked down the mountain. So what's the difference? You're saying the intervening cause is the cramp?
In his situation, in Mr. Challey's situation, you have exposure to high altitude, which causes death through the mechanism of hape and haze. But it causes death because of the exposure to the very condition he voluntarily chose to expose himself to. If you're swimming and you have a cramp, you chose to expose yourself to the water. You also got a cramp, and then you drowned. If you went into the water...
Well, but it's really a question of how you define things. Quite arguably that when you go into the water, you're exposing yourself, particularly if you're like me and don't get an exercise at all, and then say, well, I'm going to go out and swim. Quite arguably, you're exposing yourself to the possibility, like my mother used to say, you're going to get a cramp. Be careful going in the water because you might get a cramp. Why isn't that part of... my guess is the chances of somebody drowning because they get a cramp are much greater than, although we don't know, the record doesn't reflect it, than that you're going to get what this guy got climbing Kilimanjaro.
And I still say it's because there is more than one event which you voluntarily undertook. You didn't voluntarily choose to have a cramp. He voluntarily chose to expose himself to the only condition.
See, the difference is you voluntarily exposed yourself to the condition that gave you the cramp. He voluntarily exposed himself to the condition that gave him hate. So I'm having trouble when you keep trying to add something into the cramp situation or to some other situation when you're like scuba diving, for example. What is the additional event?
The additional event is the fact that you got the cramp.
And his additional event is the fact that God.
But the hape and haze are all the effects of exposure to altitude.
Yeah, and a cramp is an exposure to a water condition after a certain period of time, depending on the individual.
But the difference is that that he died, whether you call it HAPE or HACE or high altitude sickness, he died from exposing himself to the condition, intentionally wanting to reach the conditions that created his death. If you're swimming in the water, if you go in with the intent to have a cramp as well as swim, then you're tying to our situation.
But we really but have some insurance policy difficulties if we have to split hairs about whether you know, jumped off the cliff hang gliding because you intended to die, you didn't intend to die, or you went in thinking you'd get a cramp or didn't get a cramp. Are you suggesting that that will be the test then?
The test goes back to what the court talked about. The definition. In this case, the definition, the requirement is that the insured die as solely as the result of an accident. Solely as the result of an accident. And in this situation,
let's say you're scuba diving and you're down pretty low and your weight belt buckle breaks.
I'm sorry, your weight belt?
Your weight belt. Divers
right.
Carry weights. Quick ascent.
Right.
And so the buckle breaks, you drop 35 pounds of weight, and you go up.
Too quick, and you get the bounce.
And die.
The weight belt is an additional event. It's the mishap, mischance, or unexpected event that the court talked about in Botts and Phillips. And in.
What if there was no weight belt and you just got the bounce and died? Because.
That occurs because not only did you dive, but you also swam up too quickly. That's a different situation than only if he died.
Let's say he gets nitrogen narcosis.
You feel drunk, disoriented, and you take off your weight belt, which often do. The divers will take off their.
Right.
They'll take off the oxygen, they'll take off the weight belt. And let's say he does all three of those. He takes off his oxygen, he takes off his weight belt, comes up to the top much too quickly, and dies.
And I think, if you did...
Because of nitrogen narcosis.
Because of nitrogen narcosis, which is not the condition he intended to expose himself to. And that's what the court talks about is the distinction.
You're going to differentiate between nitrogen narcosis and HAPE?
That's a
very hard one. Nitrogen narcosis happens
because
seldom.
It's seldom, but it doesn't happen just because you dive. It happens because there are other events.
Actually, it does happen occasionally because you dive. Too much nitrogen gets into your bloodstream.
If you could establish that the only reason for getting nitrogen narcosis was diving to a condition where you're exposed to that and you chose to expose yourself to that, you'd fall into the same problem you have here. But when you're talking about the added event of the belt breaking or something like that, that is the misstep or mischance that's missing here. The only thing that caused his death was the exposure.
As a matter of misjudgment, you think you're going up slowly, but you're chasing a fish, you know, beautiful fish or something, and you don't realize, and you go up far
too quickly
because of carelessness.
I don't think I could give you a definition that's going to satisfy every possible situation that we could come up with. We could, for hours, come up with things, which is one of the reasons the court has talked about there is no single definition. It's part of the reason why there are not specific definitions in the policies.
There's a theme to all of this, and that is people engage in activities, some of which tend to be more dangerous than others.
Correct.
There's no totally safe mode of transportation.
Correct.
Other than elevators.
They're not safe. Look at all
the
cases against Otis.
Yes.
They're safer than almost anything else. But you can't walk. You can't ride escalators. You can't fly planes. You can't ride automobiles. You can't do almost anything in life without having some risk of something happening.
Correct.
And then there are some things that people do that are
the risk is built in.
That are more, you know, snowboarding, skiing, bungee jumping. I've done all of those. it's made for human beings. They go on those rides in amusement parks.
Yep.
Also to things which are more dangerous, I suppose, carry some inherent risk that's greater than normal living, but people do them because you live, and part of life is doing some things that are exciting, interesting, different. And then a small number of the people who engage in those activities wind up suffering what I guess one could say is severe consequences of those activities. The bungee jumper maybe has a heart attack. The question is, if you're insuring against accidents, why does that not include even remote but foreseeable consequences of the kind of activities that people engage in their lives? And if your client doesn't want to insure particular activities, you can just say mountain climbing is out, bungee jumping is out.
And you could have insurance policies that people complain about are already too long, and you could go on forever and list things, and people would continuously come up with things that you hadn't thought of, but that doesn't mean that it's accidental. You have to tie this in back to the very beginning of my point. You have to tie this into the context. We're not talking about the intent or expectation from the standpoint of the insured at the time the event occurs. It is the intent. It is the meaning of the term accident at the time the policy is purchased, and it is tied to the nature of the policy. In this situation, we have a life insurance policy with an accidental death rider. The accidental death rider is intended to not to cover all of the things that are in the life policy, only accidents. And if you take the definition that Mr. Challey is urging, you are making the two synonymous. That is not the intent, and the court has talked about the difference between when you look at something from a first-party perspective, analyzing accident in that perspective, and a person's choice to expose themselves to the very risk that causes their death versus exposing yourself to a condition where something else happens, something, some misstep, some mischance, the snowstorm, the absence of a coworker to get you to a shack to warm up, any of those things. And they're all different situations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think your time was up. We'll give you a minute for a button.
I want to make a couple real quick points about the case law. They've focused on the Phillips case a number of times here, and that's, of course, not an Oregon appellate court decision. It's District Court of Oregon from 1970, and if you look at that, virtually all of the opinion is spent talking about the facts in that case. They've got only about a paragraph where they have any kind of legal analysis at all, and what they do is take a citation from another district court case that's unpublished, and they sort of conflate that with the Finley standard. It's just, I don't think, a very well-reasoned decision, and it was criticized quite a bit by the House decision, which is an Oregon appellate court case. To the extent it says something about a foreseeability standard, I just don't think it's particularly good authority. The other point I wanted to make was they've said a number of times that all of these third-party liability cases that we relied on need to be just sort of swept aside because the context matters. And you look at the McCormick and Baxter case, and it says exactly the opposite. It says that the Finley definition applies even in liability policies, and in fact there's another one called Ramco from 1968 that does the same thing. The context, I think, does not matter. The same definition has been applied in both this kind of a policy and in liability policies over and over again. So unless you have any other questions, I think that's it.
Thank you, Casey. Sorry, you'll stand some minutes.
Thank you.
We are adjourned.